For you guys today, a little time coming, still been on a little bit of a less packed show schedule, but we're slowly getting back on track. Just been kind of trying to plan things out for a little while, just so I've got a good consistent amount of material that I think you all would find something worthy of listening to. Just been working on that. Anyway, welcome back to the Semi-Pro Poker Show. As always, I am your host, Curtis Umstead, and today we're going to be talking about what things you should be considering when you're thinking about going to either become a professional or semi-professional. Really, you should always start with, I think, semi-professional. You know, a guy like me, if you remember what I told you in the very first episode, I mentioned that I was very, very conservative in some decisions that I made, you know, in terms of how I run my life with making big life-changing decisions. So anyway, today I wanted to talk to you about how I ended up making this big decision of trying to take on this journey of becoming a semi-pro, but not kind of in the intro style, kind of what stats I looked at from last year leading into this year. And what more, I'm going to go into more details of what my plan is, but before that, I'm going to go into what I think everyone should consider before they make a huge decision like moving into the poker world as a career, because, you know, I think what people can be what I think people are apt to fall for is the idea that, let's say you go on like a winning streak for 2 months, and I mean, you're crushing the game. I'm talking some massive hot streak of 40 big blinds an hour, and you don't lose for 2 months. I mean, that's a lot of money you can accumulate, even in a game like a 1-2, in terms of compared to your normal hourly and things like that, if you're a winning player. And, you know, maybe in your outside the felt life, you come across some extra money and you're like, you know what, fuck it, I hate my job, I'm going to take this chance. You'd be surprised with a lot of things that I've read over the years on forums of people who've been taking their journeys. They've talked about how they've made, they'll explain their very small sample sizes and they'll post hands where you can just tell their thought process isn't quite there where it needs to be, but they'll still take a chance of becoming a professional poker player. And you just need to be sure of a few things off the table, along with your skills on the table, before you make a jump into that. Because, you know, I'm glad that I've seen other people try it, you know, successfully and unsuccessfully. Like, of course, I wish everyone was successful, but it also helped keep me grounded on and keep my expectations realistic in regards to this profession. So, in fact, there's a couple things that I'm consider that might be surprising in terms of what I plan to do long term, because there's a couple ways I could take. Both of them involve poker, just one of them involves more than the other. And, there are some new developments here that I'll definitely talk to you about when I get to my plan. But first, let's consider one of the most basic things when you're thinking about becoming a more serious poker player as a part of your income. And I think the first thing you should consider is expenses. Income. Expenses is next. How much money do you make now? So if you have a comfortable bankroll saved and you think based on a large sample size, and I'm going to go into what I think a large sample size is, that you have shown over a long period of time good results, that you are aware of the swings financially and the mental just beating you can take as a professional poker player. If you're aware of all of that and you still want to do it, if it still seems like something that you would find better than your current career, you just have to be sure. But if you've taken in all the information and you think that's the correct way to go, then hey, by all means, then maybe it's the right choice for you. I just want people to be sure of what they're doing, because let's say, usually what's considered a really good hourly win rate if you're a live cash game pro is probably 15 to 20 big blinds an hour. Maybe even less than that. Maybe it's 10. I think 20 is usually the peak of what you can reasonably expect. And you, at that point, you would be really crushing the game. Like, for example, if you're a 1-2 player and you're crushing the game for 20 big blinds an hour, that's $40 an hour. There have to be some pretty exorbitant circumstances for that to happen. I think you have to be playing in a deep game with a lot of fish, along with you being at the top of your game. I think what's much more reasonable is 15 and maybe 10 big blinds an hour, which is $20 to $30 an hour. Some people might consider that like a living wage, and I think it is. If it was just a flat, if you earned $20 to $30 an hour and you were working like an hourly job before, that definitely pays more. But the difference is that with poker, you have to have a lot of money behind you, because let's say you go through a downswing period. Let's say you've earned $20 an hour, right, for the longest time playing poker, and you have a bankroll of, you know, after you clear expenses and stuff, you have a bankroll of $15,000, which for 1-2, it's about 75 buy-ins. Am I right? Well, no. I'm way off here. That is 150 buy-ins, if I'm doing the math correctly. Let me think here. 10, 5, 50. So 50 would be 5,000. Yeah, so about 150 buy-ins. I mean, I may be wrong, but I'm either wrong by like one number. I'm regardless either answer. If you go through a downswing, you have to be good at saving money. And you have to be able to handle the swings, because your mental game will be taking on a whole new challenge of playing poker as your exclusive income. Speaking of income, I think you have to be single to do that. The expenses that you're going to have, and I'm going to tack onto this in a second, you better damn well make sure that $20 to $30 an hour can cover any sort of expenses if you have another dependent in your family. If you have a mortgage, if you have all things like that. I'm kind of transitioning into expenses, which is the next portion, but I think you need to be reasonably sure that you don't leave a good paying job unless you have a ton of money saved and you're that ready to make that jump. But you have to be sure. You can't have any doubt. And if you have any doubts, then it's not for you. You have to be 100% sure in regards to income. Hopefully that made sense. Next is expenses, like I was just mentioning. I'll start with me. I share an apartment with my fiance. I have two dogs, and I have rent every month. I have, you know, grocery expenses. I have bills to pay. So even someone like me who, I don't have a mortgage, I don't have a car payment, I have my car paid off, I have other things paid off already. My expenses are low. Now, right now, my income is not very high. That's the difference for me in regards to the work that I do now, but I'm making plans to change that, and I'll go over that towards the end of the episode, but if there was a situation like me where your expenses are less than $10,000 a year, which mine definitely are, I'm not calculating all the extra things that I do, but I'm off the top of my head, I'm being open here. My expenses are about $7,000 a year, which is low for a lot of people. And if you had that combined with the ability to spend smartly and combine that with having a much higher income, I think that's a scenario where if you think that professional poker is really what you want to do and you have money saved and your expenses are low, then by all means, maybe that's a shot. Maybe that's a scenario where you take a shot. Similar scenarios if you're single, if you have the full support of your significant other, your expenses are low, you have money saved. Again, it's all about having money saved. That is the important key. Because if you have so many things going on in your life, like mortgage and health insurance, medical insurance, those are about the same things, car insurance and cell phone bills and other hobbies that you like to do, if you like to go drinking every weekend, if you play golf, if you gym memberships, all sorts of stuff. You don't think of this from day to day. If you go out to eat, this stuff really adds up, and you have to calculate it and make sure that it's feasible. So I calculated all that, and I came up with about $7,000. I could be a little off. I think that could be a little bit of a conservative estimate. It could be more like $8,000. But I'm sure there are people who listen. Well, I know people who are married, people who own homes, who own multiple properties, who have higher incomes, but, have multiple cars, things like that. I mean, that stuff is really relevant. And that's why I think right now, you don't have to jump into full professional. You can be a semi-professional. You can play 20 hours a week, but you can treat it as a part of your income. You can treat it, in terms of your education, in terms of how much you put into the work you put into it off the table. If you travel to play tournaments, like the WSOP every summer, circuit events around the country, that's a viable option. That is a job you can take on. And I think that's much more feasible. Until you are just crushing the game and you are ready to make, if you're a 15, 20 big blind an hour winner at like 2.5, that's where you start making real considerable money. That's where you start making between $75,000 and $100,000 a year. Again, is that feasible? I'm not sure. But if you're a strong winning 2.5 and then even 5.10 player, that's the money where you can consider living strictly off of poker. If you're that good, if you're that consistent, if you keep that drive going, that's the area where you'd want to reach. But if you're a moderate 2.5 winner, I think semi-pro is the way to go. If you're a 1-2 winner, I think semi-pro is the way to go. With expenses, you can do things like, say you dive into poker, but maybe keep a part-time job on the side. Even then, I think that is better. Because think about it, if you play 40 hours a week as a job, and you have other things you like to do during the week. Like you have your study time, which you have to do. If you're a full-time player, you have to study all the time. You will have continuing education that a lot of jobs require, in the medical field, things like that, where they require you to have 24 hours a year, something like that. You will have a continuing education every single year with poker because it always changes. And maybe you'll learn a new game. Maybe Pot Limit Omaha one day takes over and becomes the most popular game. I don't think that's going to happen, but maybe it's viable for you to learn that. So you do some PLO. Something like that. So anyway, you play 40 hours a week. There's 168 hours a week, right? So minus 40, that's 128. Let's say you sleep 8 hours a day. That's 56, okay? So like I said, we started with 168. We subtracted 40. And then we're subtracting 56 hours from sleeping. So that's 72 hours. Let's say you eat 6 hours, 6-7 hours out of the week. That's way off. Let's say you eat 10 hours out of the week. You're down to 62 hours. You like to watch TV or play video games 4 hours a week. You're down to 58. All that considered, you still have 58 hours that you can give to working some sort of part-time job. You theoretically could work. You know, this is crazy. I think this is a little bit of an extreme number. Let's realistic when we count rest and extracurricular activities. Let's say you have about another 20 hours a week that you can contribute to a part-time job. That could make a significant difference in paying off some expenses that you have every month. Paying off groceries, paying off rent, paying off mortgage, whatever. If you can find some sort of part-time job, maybe that is, you know, part of what your full-time job used to be. That can make a huge difference. And you can still be a full-time professional if you're into investing. I don't know the second thing about investing. Like, I just watched the movie The Big Short last night, and not that that's, you know, that relevant, but just in terms of the stock market and things, you know, and I've learned a little bit over the years, basic stuff. If you're an investor and you have a stable income from smartly investing, if you've been doing it for a long time, then that too. That is also something that you can do. And I know I mentioned if you own property that you rent out. There's just so many other things that you can do that I will certainly do whenever that day comes where I decide to play full time or I decide to play 30 hours a week as a form of supplemental income. These are just all factors that you need to consider when deciding to make the jump. Again, I haven't gotten to what my plan is in reaction to all of these, but I'll go over that. Lastly, and well, not lastly, let me cover some other things. If you've got other hobbies, like if you like to play golf or sports, or if you watch, you know, if you spend Sundays watching the NFL, if you do things like fantasy football that I throw some time into, I probably spend during the season, during the actual NFL regular season, with podcasts that I listen to and some mock, you know, lineup examinations and things like that, I probably spend a good 3-4 hours on fantasy football per week. Around there. Could be a little... No, I think that's about accurate. 3-4 hours with listening to a couple guys each week and, you know, checking my lineups, looking at, examining different matchups, and I think all of that is cool, but if you have extra activities like that too, how much do they cost? Are you, like that, just kind of attacking on extra expenses, things like that. So, this is all important. This is stuff that you may have to definitely keep going. I think it's important, the reason I brought this up is it's important to have balance. I know I mentioned this a few episodes where I had an episode about balance where I talked about having other life activities that can keep you from getting burnt out, because I think everyone has hit that wall before with poker. If you've gone into lots of studying and you've ramped up your education, things like that, it can be a little different and it can be challenging. Poker is still a job, and we all are going to find aspects about work that we absolutely cannot stand. And it's no different. We may have more fun with this job, for sure, but it could always be a little, you know. It's important to have those life-balancing activities. So make sure you don't affect those. Make sure you still have good relationships, that you're social. All of that is important just to having a good, balanced life. And you will need that more than ever if you decide to make the jump. Okay, and lastly and most importantly, you have to be sure that you are good enough to make it. Now, that sounds stern, and it's supposed to be. You need to be sure that you're good enough to make it. I still believe that even today, that poker is a very beatable game, that people do not put enough time into their poker education, that they stick to old habits, even if they learn something. For example, there was a game I played at not too long ago where it was a new game. It's the first time I'd been there. And the host had a lot of poker books, like, on his little shelf. He had a whole room decked out. He was a home game host, and he had this really cool room that he used for hosting. You know, lots of different wallpapers and items hung up and, you know, unique trinkets and collectibles. Stuff that I would probably do if I ever ran a home game and you had a weekly home game with people who I enjoyed the company of. Like, you know, because I consider a lot of people who I play with every week to be friends. And it's that kind of environment, like jovial environment. And in his room, he had a whole bookcase of a lot of poker books. He had things like The Theory of Poker by David Sklansky. He had all of Dan Harrington's books, both on cash games and his tournament books. He had Phil Gordon's books. Had Phil Hellmuth's Poker Pro book. Negreanu's Power Hold'em, and he had both super systems. You know, stuff that some people can have the debate whether or not they're relevant anymore, but definitely good material, especially like The Theory of Poker, and which is a book I actually don't have, but I've read excerpts of it. I've borrowed it from other people, and it was definitely worth my time. Very dry, but it was worth my time. And he had a few other books, too. And so I'm thinking that this guy is pretty well-versed in poker, that he has all this material, and he's been hosting for a while, and, you know, with my scouting report for the game, I heard he, you know, wasn't too bad. So I get in a hand, and a hand where I have aces, and we're playing 50-cent dollar blinds. And I have aces in late position. I have hardly... I've played one hand in about an hour and a half. Just been very card dead. Situations that have come up just haven't been profitable. Haven't had really a chance to make any moves either. I've been looking. But I'm kind of evaluating others anyway. Just because it's my new... it's my first time at this game since I'm new. So this guy limps in from under the gun. This host. And another guy limps as well. Anyway, like I said, another guy limps as well, and I have aces. I have red aces from late position. And I make it $5 to go over some limpers. The guy in the small blind 3-bets to 15. And this host under the gun plus one who's thinking about it. And so far what I'd seen from him, he'd been a little bit loose pre-flop. But he had won a couple hands, but nothing, you know, crazy. I think he'd limped in with a 7-8 suited and flopped a straight and got a guy to pay off with an overpair. You know, something like that. Standard so far. And he thinks about it, and he flats the 15. I'm like, that's really interesting. The guy who limped behind him also flats. So, I mean, I've been 3-bet, and both people in front of me have called. Both people in front of the 3-better have called. So I'm in a very profitable situation already. There's $50 in the pot, 50 big blinds in the pot already. So with my $160 stack, I decide to make it 50. And because I just don't see that many people fold when they 3-bet. Preflop. I just don't, at low stakes, I just don't see it too often. You could argue 50 is a little big, that maybe you should stick it down to like 40, 45. I hear you, but with that mantra, can you think about the last time somebody who's made a significant 3-bet fold to a 4-bet? Who's not good? And the guy who 3-bet, from what I'd seen, was not good. When was the last time you saw that happen? Unless I had like shipped 150. That, I could see that. But if it was anything less, when was the last time you saw somebody do that? It doesn't happen often. So he calls. And this guy, this host who limped in, he thinks about it, and he calls. And then the guy from mid-position, he folds. So we're three ways going to this flop. Okay? And, like I said, I have red aces. And this guy has limp... called a 3-bet and a 4-bet. a 50 big blind. So I'm thinking this guy has, I don't know if he's trying to set mine incorrectly. He seemed like he wasn't sure what to do. That's the important fact here. Anyway, the board runs out 10, 3, 2, all spades. Okay. So it is a monotone board. I don't have the ace of spades. Again, my ace is red, so I don't block any flush draws. However, I think that the majority of the hands that we're up against here, according to rules, we're in a four-bet pot. I feel like I'm probably up against a bunch of pairs. So the only thing I could really feel like I'm losing here to is like pocket tens. I don't see how threes or twos get in here very often. I think that would be rather shocking. So it's really tens, and that's about it. So what do you do here? With the pot being 165. Well, I have under that, so I go ahead and move all in. You know, maybe if someone has ace-king offsuit, and they have, like, the ace of spades, maybe I'll get called. Well, I would definitely get called there. But I think that's the correct play here. The small blind, well, they check to me. I move in. The small blind folds, and this guy who limped, this host, who I consider with all of his material to be well-versed in Hold'em, Hold'em, snap calls. He turns over ace-10 offsuit with the ace of spades. This guy who's read all these books, he's mentioned things like Sklansky books and implied odds and all this stuff. He called $50 preflop with ace-10 offsuit. He limp called a 3 and a 4 bet. Can you believe that? The reason I bring this up, because even somebody like him, who probably thinks of himself as good, by the way, in terms of results, he did turn a spade and I lost. But I wasn't upset. Like, I thought this game was a gold mine off that alone. I could not believe that. I was shocked. Even when I lost, I was like, holy shit, this game is amazing. So, even if you walk into somewhere where someone's read so many books, and I've seen this multiple times now that I think about it, where I've gone to a home game, where a host has lots of books, or I've heard other people talk about books that they've read. They can talk a good game, but all you have to do is watch their play, and that will tell you everything that they know on how good they are. So the reason I bring this up is, even if you have read books, even if you think, well, I haven't done that, you need to be sure that you are ready. It takes a mental fortitude that some of us just simply do not have. I'm sure you can build it, like a toughness about you, but it takes some time. And I will go over some things that I've used to help work on, that's helped prepare me for that. But I just thought that was amazing, because this guy clearly thought he was incredible. And he talked a big game, and he's played at the WSOP, and I was like, I wasn't sure this guy was great, but I was like, if he's read these books, and he's done all this stuff, and all this stuff that he has in his room that he's hosting in, you know, maybe this guy is a decent player. I'll keep an eye on him. No, he was terrible. He was awful. And even after I lost that buy-in, I ended up making my money back. No problem. So, what do I do? What's my plan? Well, in August, I'm actually going back to school. I'm getting my associate's in radiography. I'm going to be learning how to give x-rays. And it's going to take me about a year and a half. And starting income is about, on average in Virginia, about $40,000 to $45,000 a year from the different sources that I've looked at. Not a ton of money, but compared to my hourly work that I've done for a long time, that's substantial an increase. It has a very high job market for future growth. The degree that you need really is all that you need, along with your clinical experience, 1 year of experience, but you get that in the program, doing two different semesters with clinical experience. So the reason I bring that up is that's how I'm going to help build my bankroll. My bankroll right now just isn't large enough to make a significant jump. And it, while it could be, when I said 2018, I would also finish school right around 2018. That's how long it would take me. And eventually what I will learn to do after that, it will only take me an extra year of schooling, is to then learn how to do radiation therapy. And that is treating cancer patients. A lot of you who know me know that I am a people person, that I like to talk. I like to interact with human beings. I get a I get a satisfaction out of learning things about people, things that they do, the journeys they've taken to get to where they are. I find that stuff fascinating. And when I was doing my schooling originally at University of Louisville, I kind of had hints that my degree wasn't for me. My last year, I got some hints that this is not what I wanted to do. Everything in sports management is very connection-based. And I know I delved into this a little bit in the first episode where it was just really hard to find a job. It was just all connection-based. But after a while, I just didn't want to anymore. I had a dissatisfaction with the sports field. And for the longest time, I've been looking for a field where you can make money, where there's jobs, you can learn a skill that only you can provide, you can interact with people. And I've always liked the healthcare industry, and I wish I'd listened to myself back in the day. I'm a very health-conscious person. I only drink water. I drink hot tea, which I'm actually drinking right now, believe it or not. I drink that every day. And I drink juice. A few times a week, you know, I may crack open a beer if I go out with any friends, but the only time I drink soda is when I go to the movies. Other than that, it is water and tea and milk. I drink organic chocolate milk that gives me calories and just pretty much fucking tastes good too. But I'm also good on eating relatively well. And all those factors led me to, and then when I looked into what these people do as a job and how much money they make, and radiation therapists make about $77,000 to $80,000 a year, which to me is a lot of money. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that is the way that I'm going to definitely build my role to build my bankroll. And along with the work that I'm doing now and the poker that I'm playing now, that's what I'm going to be doing off the table. And I'll definitely bring tidbits in, you know, with whatever I can relate to poker and, you know, people interaction, you know, psychology, things like that, anything that I learn. That's my plan in regards to how I'm going to build my bankroll and, you know, keep going semi-professionally and then maybe eventually make the jump into full-time. Because that's what I promised you guys, and we're going to do that. That is the point of the show. It's going to happen. Don't worry. In terms of income, like I mentioned, these jobs pay, the first one, the first associates I'll get will pay about $40,000 a year, maybe more. And after a year of schooling, radiation therapy will then pay about $75,000, $80,000 a year, which will build my income, which will build my bankroll. My expenses, you know, me and my fiance have talked about it. In terms of home ownership, we definitely will not do it while we live here in Virginia because the property taxes and just the cost of living is way higher. It's higher than other parts of the U.S., definitely in relation to the East Coast. Just feels like the further north that you go, I don't know what Delaware or New Jersey costs are, but I know how much New York costs are, and Maryland, and here in Virginia. It just can be very expensive. So we're actually thinking that when she's done with her active duty contract, that wherever we move after that, that's where I may end up taking that shot. We're looking at areas where there are casinos and things like that, but that's years away. But just something we're considering because it's just too expensive to own a home here, unless we plan on living here a long time, which we're not exactly sure about. So my expenses will not be high in terms of living costs for a long time. I've got my life balanced out with other activities. You know, I got my dogs that I walk once or twice a day at least, a few miles. You know, I have an active fitness life in terms of I'm always staying active. And all of that is important for me and my mental health whenever the day comes with that. And then finally, I'm going to let you know what my stats are from last year to give you an idea on why I decided to make this a option for me in the future. So I played a total of 350 hours, which is equal to about 7 hours a week. I think that's a little skewed because the first few months of living here in 2015, I didn't have a game that I was regularly playing at until about April, and then May, really. So if you take the whole year into account, I probably played more towards like 14 hours a week starting in May, but I only played about half a year. I made $7,080. That's a win rate of $20 an hour. So that's about 10 big blinds an hour. It's a little skewed because a little bit was 2-5, a lot of it was 50 cent 1, and the majority of it was 1-2. So roughly about, if you add everything in, about $10, 10 big blinds an hour at 1-2, which is good. Which is definitely good. And I played a total hour, I've won 45 out of 71 sessions, which is a winning percentage of 63%, which is good. And that's what got me to making this. So just consider all of your factors before you decide to go into that, into full time. That's going to wrap it up for us here. I will see you all in the next episode. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.